Welcome to the Maya on Money podcast, where we discuss all things money, because whether or not we like it, money matters. And today our focus is on the finances of small business owners. Now, on the 25th of February, when the national budget was announced, there was a lot for me to unpack, I have to tell you, but one of the most significant changes were to small businesses, and I was definitely celebrating that. The first was that the VAT threshold was increased from 1 million to 2.3 million. And then the turnover tax, the maximum turnover to qualify for turnover tax, was also increased to 2.3 million. But what does this mean for you as a small business? So, for example, you may have a turnover of 1.5 million. Do you now deregister for VAT? And do you qualify for turnover tax, which, let's be honest, can be very favorable? So to answer all of these questions, I am joined by Seelan Muthadian, who is Director and Head of VAT at BDO. So welcome, Seelan. Thank you for joining us and
Good morning, Maya.
Your pearls of wisdom today.
Thank you. Good morning, dear listeners.
So I think I want to start off with VAT, because I think that's a very, very important one. And this is your speciality, of course, is, you know, if you're a business and your turnover is more than a million, so you were already, you were registered for VAT, but it's nowhere near the 2.3 million. What are the pros and cons of staying registered or deregistering? What are you advising at this stage?
All right. So before I get into that, I'd just like to state that people often underestimate the complexity of submitting a VAT return. It's a self-assessment tax, which means you are responsible for what you put on that tax return, the correctness of it. And when you sign it and you send it to SARS, you have undertaken to ensure that whatever's on that VAT return is true and correct. So that places a huge burden on a small businessman, for instance, who may not have the necessary tax knowledge. Coming back to whether you should deregister, well, there are pros and there's cons. The pros are, well, you're not sitting with having to submit VAT returns on a monthly or bi-monthly basis. You're saving on fees, paying a consultant to do your VAT returns, your accountant fees, and so on. And of course, you don't have to charge output tax on your supplies. However, the cons that are there is that people don't think about it, is that if you deregister for VAT, there is a deeming provision in the VAT Act which says you are making a supply of all the assets and trading stock that you have on hand at that point in time. So from a cash flow perspective, you now have to account for that VAT. And as a small business, we know cash flow is particularly important, and this could have a negative or adverse effect. If you are supplying only to non-VAT vendors, then yes, deregistering is a pro for you. But if you're supplying vendors, the fact that you're not allowed to claim input tax now means you are less competitive in the market. You have to absorb that 15% you would have claimed, and you're now passing that on to a VAT vendor, potentially, who could have claimed it if you had charged output tax on that supply. So, and the other thing we find is that a lot of bigger companies, if you supply bigger companies, this is just from a commercial perspective or perception. If you're not registered for VAT, sometimes it creates the perception that you're a very small business, possibly not being reliable, not consistent with supplies, and so on. So that's the negative. The other thing that you would possibly also find is that on the deregistration process at SARS, they may perform what we call a deregistration audit. So as part of the deregistration process, you'll submit all your financials and so on for the year. They'd have a look and see what were your assets, your liabilities, and so on. And then they may come back and start scrutinizing all of that. So for deregistration, there is a possible risk that SARS may perform that, and if your affairs are not in order, well, you're going to be subject to interest and penalties should they find anything. Being a vendor as well, we know that SARS's focus has been a lot on that. It's a tax they're going to have to look towards going forward, increasing their revenues. So the monthly verification audits has increased dramatically. So if you are with that vendor, you're dealing with that on a monthly basis, which could be a huge administration burden for smaller businesses. So in essence, if there's a long and short of it is if you are supplying VAT vendors, you should rather remain a registered VAT vendor. So the chances are within a year or two, your business could grow significantly, and then you would have to go back on to SARS's books as a registered VAT vendor and go through that whole process, which we know can be very difficult.
I think that's, I like the way that you're looking at it from the business's client's perspective. So you're saying, who is your client? So if your client's a corporate or a VAT registered, as VAT registered, then it makes sense to remain a VAT vendor. If your clients are not VAT registered, then you're having to pass on effectively a 15% higher cost to them because you are VAT registered. So it could make a lot of sense for your client as well, who could not claim that back, for you not to be registered for VAT. So I think that's probably quite a, I think that's probably a good starting point. It's very simple, yes, no, and then look at it from there. But now, if you decide, oh well, my client base has changed, many of my clients are deregistering from VAT because they were also small businesses, you've got to be prepared for the audits and for the some of the admin that's going to come with deregistering. And would you advise it's worth, and I imagine you are, will say this is worth paying for, but I would think I'd want to pay someone to help me through that process.
Yes, I would strictly advise taxpayers to get assistance. As I said, you often the complexities with that is underestimated. I think it's merely just submitting a return, but there's a lot of responsibilities which a VAT vendor has, documentary requirements, and so on, which they're not aware of in most instances, and that's where they can fall short of the VAT Act. I'll give you an example. A lot of small businesses in South Africa export goods. They start with a small businesses exporting into Africa, and a lot of them zero rate those supplies. But those supplies and the zero rating is subject to you having certain information in your possession, customs documentations, proof of payment, proof that the client in the African country is not registered for VAT in South Africa or resident in South Africa, and so on. So what would happen is if you are responsible for exporting those goods into Africa and it's your cartage contractor or you personally taking the goods across the border, then that's very easy to get all those documents because you are responsible for the export. You can get hold of the customs documents. But where the African client cartage contractors come into South Africa and then take the goods out, you have no control over that export. You don't know whether it leaves the country. And in those instances, there's very strict requirements. And to the extent that you don't get those export documents proving that it's left South Africa, that it's entered the African country, you then have to account for output tax on that. So that becomes an additional cost for the small businessman. He's got no leverage to demand the information from his client. And in most instances, the clients put a lot of pressure and say, no, we don't want you to arrange transport. We'll send our guys in to come and fetch it. So there's that huge risk sitting there. That is just one example that I can think of where small businesses are exposed at present. Because what happens is if you don't account for the output tax on that supply, so that hits your bottom line ultimately, because I can promise you there's no way your African client is going to pay that amount to you if you go and say, sorry, I don't have the documents. Please give me that additional 15%. They don't care. They've got their goods and they're gone. So we've seen a lot of clients, and as you know, SARS can go back up to 5 years. So for a small business, that can be the death of a small business, and just not complying with documentary requirements. Well, SARS will impose, as we know, 10% penalties, interest, and in certain circumstances, they may even impose understatement penalties. So you can just imagine those understatement penalty penalties go from 10 to 200% plus the late payment penalties of 10% and interest. That can really add up to a huge amount at the end of the day.
And I think what we're all starting to realize is that SARS is under enormous pressure to collect. So we're certainly
Yes.
seeing this huge increase in the scrutiny of finances. And I have actually called SARS to task a few times because they definitely are targeting small businesses. And
Yes.
they're saying, well, that's where we see the most VAT fraud. So they're saying that is the problem, is the VAT fraud. So I suppose what they're saying here is, okay, we're going to up to increase, you know, we're going to, it's going to make it less onerous. You can go up to 2.3 million before you need to be VAT registered. But boy, once you're VAT registered, believe you me, we will be watching you and scrutinizing you. And of course, there's also going to be the introduction of the modernization of the VAT system. They're going to have
Yes,
e-invoicing, which
of
is going to be
course.
another area that small businesses are going to comply with. How are you seeing that developing for small businesses?
Yeah, for small businesses, that's going to be extremely difficult, the financial outlay to get your systems in line with what SARS need. It's huge. I know, for instance, in Germany, they delayed the rollout of e-invoicing for a number of years. It's been postponed, but it's not an easy thing to do. Different businesses use different accounting packages to prepare their VAT returns and the financial statements. So, unless we're going to see SARS producing software which it will make available to taxpayers, it's going to be a huge cost and very difficult for small businesses to implement.
I have to tell you, I'm watching the banks quite carefully here because I'm seeing, you know, the banks often offer small businesses sort of packages, software packages, accounting
That's
packages.
right.
And I have actually been asking them recently, saying, are you going to integrate e-invoicing into this? So I'm hoping that that is one way the banks can assist their customers, is to help
Yes.
integrate that into the SARS system.
Yeah, I think from a small business perspective, that would be great. If the banks can assist them with that, because as we know, the banks have the capital and the funding to invest in that, whereas the smaller businesses don't. I think with the multinational businesses, that may be easier for them, because in the various jurisdictions, they will have to implement e-invoicing. So they would have had the experience and the money to do so within South Africa.
Well, yeah, I think there's a lot to think about. And certainly I must tell you, I am VAT registered, and I'm going to stay VAT registered because most of my clients are themselves VAT registered. So it's not really an
Yes.
issue for me. And I certainly don't feel like the admin of deregistering, that's for sure. And I suppose also, you know, if you're a business, maybe your turnovers, and I mentioned sort of 1.5 million or something like that, then, you know, you're hoping to grow your business. So, and let me tell you, SARS is not going to be lifting, or Treasury is not going to lift this limit again next year. So
Yes.
you're probably going to reach that limit quite quickly. So I think overall,
No,
on balance, if you're registered and your clients are registered, status quo.
I mean, think about it. The last increase we had in the VAT threshold, I think, was in 2009. So we've had it for 17 years, which is a very long time. And so easily that amount became irrelevant. You know, a million rand, it's virtually nothing these days for businesses and small businesses.
So now I want to move on to turnover tax, because that was another thing that was changed to 2.3 million, also from 1 million to 2.3
Yes.
million. And just for our listeners, turnover tax is for small businesses where you just get taxed on your total turnover. You don't have to show profits and losses
Yes.
and all the rest of it. But I have to tell New Zealand, people have suddenly woken up to this. And I had someone contacting me saying to me, first of all, he said all his home office expenses have been disallowed. And maybe we can make a little quick comment on how strict SARS is
Sure.
around home office expenses.
Yeah.
But he's saying that his tax consultant has recommended that he apply for the small business tax, business turnover tax. And he said, wow, when I look at the numbers, I'm going to save so much tax. And I said to him, whoa, be very careful. This is a very, very specific tax
Yes.
framework for very specific businesses. So I think I want to perhaps be very clear to people about who qualifies for this. It's a very attractive tax, but not everyone qualifies for it. So maybe let's start off with the home office comment. Let's just make a comment about what
Okay.
you're seeing coming out of home offices for small businesses.
Yeah, so I mean, for a good few years now, SARS has been implementing very strict controls and tests for claiming of home office expenditure, for instance. And a lot of times it's disallowed because taxpayers don't comply with what's been requested or what's needed to prove the expense. So, for instance, like with the space, the area space in of the office, you need to clearly be able to show that it's a demarcated area. It's not being made to mixed use. So, for instance, your office and the desk is not in your room, for instance, your bedroom. You know, it's a separately demarcated. You can show the square meterage at the end of the day. Is there any other office equipment within that space to justify you calling it an office? Is that the primary place where you earn your income from? You know, if it's not, and you're using it only in the afternoons, then the SARS in all probability will not allow it. You know, you've got to show that your main income is earned from that space. So yeah, it's a huge burden on a small businessman once again to go through all that effort to be able to claim that amount.
So let's move on to the small business turnover tax. And just to for listeners, basically you pay no tax if your turnover is 600,000 or less. And then you pay a very small amount, like 1% of your turnover between 600 and 600,000 and 950,000, and then it goes up to 3% for any amount above 1.4 million, up to, I suppose, 2.3 million. So you look at that and you think, wow, okay. And he was saying, jeepers, you know, my income currently is this huge amount, and I'll only have to pay 3% tax on it. No, I think we need to explain what turnover tax is.
Yes, of course. So the requirements and eligibility requirements are set out in the sixth schedule of the income tax, if anybody wants to go have a look at it. But it's generally meant for businesses which are like sole proprietors, partnerships, companies, co-cooperatives, and so on. And it's not really focused on the personal services provider. So let's just say you're an electrician and you have high input tax on consumables and so on, then yes, turnover tax will be to your advantage. Your cash flow is not hampered by it. Like if you were registered for VAT, you should have to pay it out on a monthly basis. Whereas here, it only looks at your gross turnover and you account for that when you're making your payment in that regard. But the downside of it is that you may not be claiming all your input taxes, for instance. You may end up paying more dependent on where on the scale you are. Because let's just understand, turnover tax was introduced to simplify the administration of small businesses and to ensure that cash flow is not hampered. So, but at the end of the day, there's still going to be taxes payable to SARS. And then with SARS using AI and the like going forward to perform their audits and to investigate things, I think it's going to be a very tough situation for small businesses as well. In the past, you could get away with a lot more. These days, it's virtually impossible. SARS scrutinizes everything.
Absolutely. And they will want to know, you know, so if you're now a consultant and you're earning only fees, it's not like you're going to be able to move from personal tax to turnover tax. That's not going to happen.
I wouldn't recommend them that they do that.
Well, I just want to say thank you so much because I think you've given us some very good sort of outlines for those small businesses who've heard of these changes and wondering how do we take advantage of them. And I think just to summarize, if you're already a registered VAT vendor and your clients are VAT vendors, just stick with it. Don't worry too much about it. Be aware of e-invoicing that's coming. Start finding out, speaking to your bank and finding out if they're going to be introducing. I think it's only going to come out in 2028, most likely. But
Well,
there
let's
are
see. Let's see.
Well, let's see. Well, I think that'll be the start, and I think they'll probably start with large corporates. But there are things coming, and I think as a small business, you just need to be aware of them. And then also, don't sort of rush off and think you found a loophole when it comes to paying tax, because one thing I'm 100% sure of is SARS closes every loophole every time, and then they fine you for it as well. So
Yes, they
that's
do.
probably the best advice. Well, thank you once again.